not live and coming to you from a new location for today from the gorgeous, stunning Langham Building in Wilshire Park of Los Angeles from Kathy St. George's lovely apartment. It's the Bob Dean Show.
Yay!
The Ruby Studio where we normally tape our show is... there's a movie being shot there today, so Kathy was lovely enough to put it together at the end. Here we are. This is episode 82. Episode 82.
I'm so glad it's older than me.
Well, you know what I just thought about? Because I am, exactly. I am recovering from my hip surgery. It was 3 weeks tomorrow. I did request that they kept the bone for me so I could bring it on the Bob Dean Show. Yay. But I forgot to call the hospital for them to put it in a Ziploc bag, so hopefully...
You
I can
know
get
what?
Hold of
they
them.
They tried to give me something. I just said nothing.
Oh, I wanted. I asked that. I said I want my bones.
Turn your chair so you face more that.
Well, she says I'm okay.
You're good.
Okay. Well, you're getting the giant profile of me. What about this great haircut and my beard's as long as it's ever been for?
You look fabulous.
We zapped it. She told me it looked really cute. We were laughing about it, but anyway.
Yeah, you don't look like alfalfa at all today.
Oh, thank you. Well, because what's left? Let's see. I always take this opportunity to say that the Bob Dean Show, yay. Never, or speaking only for myself, not my friends or guests, that I hate Wells Fargo Home Mortgage because they're crooks. Yay.
Yes.
As well as Tower Urology Billing Department. These are my own little pet peeves. You feel free. What's our phone number?
Can I have a hate too? Can I have a hate?
Of course.
I hate Medicare and all the shit you have to go through when you have to get Medicare, because I went to get my prescriptions that I had on my old insurance and it was $15 and it's now $1,150 a month, because they're trying to kill you off when you turn 65. That's what they're trying to do.
Too many baby boomers. Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
I wish you some success.
So, I've had to cold turkey off my meds, so good luck with that.
And I hate the DEA.
Welcome back, Kathy. This is episode 82. We've been on hiatus for a while because of the surgery. We are coming back with a vengeance. Dennis Olson is here today. Kathy's lovely Kathy St. George. Hi, Sammy Junio, our producer back there. Yay.
Sammy.
And hello to Zach Herndon in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Zach. Part of the original crew.
Zach.
Love you. Say a big shout out to Sunder Kroonquist from the LA School of Comedy, where we originated at 10835 Santa Monica Boulevard in beautiful Westwood. Yay.
Hey.
And Maybelline, of course. Maybelline's back, everybody. Yay. Our special guest today is Amy
Pova.
I can't even read my own writing. Amy Pova Robertson?
Ralston
Pova. Thank you. I can't even do my own hieroglyphics. Yeah. And Amy is a very interesting lady. We're new friends. She's new friends to Deja, but you're old friends with Kathy. And Amy spent some time in prison, and she is an activist now. She is head of the Can Do Justice Through Clemency campaign and organization. Her documentary 420, we watched last night. It's fascinating. I hope you all will check that out as well. So let's just jump in there with you. So hi, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And I have to thank Kathy St. George, who's been my friend for decades.
She's aces. We love her.
To have me on.
So you spent nine plus years in a California Dublin jail.
Right. Well, if you want to get technical,
prison.
If you want to get technical, it's prison.
Yes.
And it's federal. It wasn't a state. In fact, we just heard Felicity Huffman is probably going to Dublin, but she'll be at the camp. I was at the medium security facility, which has major fencing and razor wire and a little white truck, several white trucks that drive around with a gun.
Okay, and not to be ignorant about it, but would that be along the same lines as the setting for the show Orange is the New Black? Kind of medium.
It's the federal, yeah.
Medium,
you know, it's funny that they filmed it the way they did, because Piper was, who I've met, I've met Piper several times. She was in a camp, but the way they filmed it, it doesn't really look like a camp. They have it a little bit more medium type.
It's like a level two.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't.
If there's only four levels.
There's pillars in there too.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be very candid with us today. Like I said, you talk about, this is very interesting. Tell us about the Can Do organization that you started.
Well, I started the Can Do Foundation, which stands for Clemency for All Nonviolent Drug Offenders, because I received clemency from President Clinton on July 7th, 2000. I was serving a 24-year sentence for MDMA, for conspiracy. The best kept secret in the nation, because people don't understand that if you do one overt act, which means You collect money, bail money. You give somebody a ride. Whatever. Make a phone call.
Wow. Really? So even if you if you organize your friends and they give you bail money to free a friend or something like that, you're considered it's
you could just be doing a favor for a friend.
She didn't even know the details.
And get caught up.
I'm sorry to interrupt
what
you.
What happens is they can indict you for conspiracy. That means they can throw lots of people in the indictment, and then the feeding frenzy begins where they start cutting deals for whoever will cooperate. And if you go to trial, that's who ends up with 20 to life, because you are sentenced based on the drugs that other people sell, and they usually cut a deal, because if you're caught red-handed, it's much easier to cooperate than if you were on the peripheral edges, and they tell you, oh, we want you to work with us and become an informant. Right. Or you may know a little bit, but you're like, this isn't my thing. You know, my husband was arrested in Germany. Which
I was
going
to say, can you explain to the audience how the whole, how long were you married to this guy?
3 years. 3 years. Really longer than that, but 3 years, and then we separated. Mm-hmm. I came to L.A. to get away from him. He was an alcoholic and a womanizer, but he was a successful business entrepreneur.
Well, you're very young, too, because you're very young now.
He had a Stanford Law School graduate. He didn't practice law, but he graduated Stanford Law School. So, I mean, he was a successful guy. It's just that he was kind of a nightmare. So...
and he was, you came to L.A. and you were telling me earlier, where were you guys?
Dallas.
In Dallas.
I met him in Dallas. And Dallas was ground central for MDMA going recreational. Doctors used to use it in Northern California for medicinal purposes.
Medicinal marriage counseling and that sort of thing.
Dr. Shulgin was the one who was the chemist who kind of rediscovered it. Then... It seems like there was a gentleman named Michael Clegg who apparently tried it medicinally and decided this is something that everybody needs to have access to. He probably also saw the green. And so he took it recreational first. My husband knew him, but I never met Michael because he tried to shield me, and I never knew about Michael from the big picture, which was that when we met in 85, March of 85, he was already sort of setting the groundwork to manufacture it. He was trying to figure out how to line this up.
And having a very brilliant business mind and credentials and that sort of
thing.
I mean, he's a smart guy.
Yeah, you know? I worked for one of his companies, Commonwealth Bank Corp. We did second mortgage lending for people who were adding a swimming pool or a home improvement loan. So that was one of many businesses he owned. So yeah, no, he... But he had it manufactured in Guatemala and then later in Germany. But by the time he was arrested, I was already out here for a year. I'd met the lovely Kathy St. George. I was promoting nightclubs, Tramp and China Club and Loving Life. Yeah, yeah, I was actually Loving Life when the feds busted
and
into my home.
What was his name, your ex, Sandy?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you came to L.A. Right. Were you still in contact with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course you were. You're only in a process of separation.
They were friendly. You know, they were friends, right. But they were not.
He was hard to shake. I left him several times, and I was 24 when I met him.
I was going
to
say.
On the cusp of turning 25. Mm-hmm. He was 20 years my senior and a master manipulator. And it got to the point where I realized... I'm not sophisticated enough to understand the manipulation process of I'll quit drinking, I'll do anything, I need you, please stay in my life, you know, I can't live without you. Just the things that when you get older, you learn to kind of shrug off and understand that this isn't going to change. So after leaving him a few times or threatening divorce and him talking me out of it, I just came up with I said, you know what, I'm going to L.A. And I said, you can go to L.A. and you can go wherever you want, but I'm going to L.A.
You had any core to L.A. prior? Where are you from originally? Born
in Dallas, raised in Arkansas.
Oh, that's okay.
But I had been to I came out to with my family to visit our cousins who lived up near the San Jose area. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a teenager thinking, why do we live in Arkansas? You know. And that's not a dig on Arkansas.
And the Tennessee boy here, too. You know, the humidity.
I love Arkansas and I love the lake life. But I just remember thinking, my God, the weather's so great here. And I knew then, I was like, at some point in my life, I'm going to make it to California.
Went right in with she was just, Next thing I knew, Amy.
But I mean, so you just came to town not really knowing too many people.
No,
you just packed the bag and said, here I come.
But I'm very,
easy to get to know.
I'm kind of friendly.
That's part of our southern charm.
Friendly person. Mm-hmm. I just love.
Where was your first apartment in town? I love asking, where was your first apartment? Do you remember?
Marina Del Rey. I can get real thick with it if you want me to.
What is that, the place next to it, right up the hill? Playa Del Rey.
Playa Del Rey, yeah. That's where my friend Steve and Beth live, and they've got the most magnet. Their house, they have a beautiful home, but they've got the most fantastic view I've ever seen in my life. From their picture window, you can see the Catalina all the way around to the Hollywood sign.
And it was $600 a month.
Okay, now back to, I was watching Three's Company, and they lived in Santa Monica, and they were scraping together their $300 a month rent.
That is funny.
But okay, so anyway, I was asking you, you just packed up and moved to L.A. And now back to the situation with you were separated from Sandy at the time, came to L.A.,
he kept pursuing me out here. He would drop in, he would visit, he would send flowers. He was just, and at first I was adamant. No, you can't, I don't want to see you. And then over time I was just like, look, we'll just be friends. But that sent the wrong message because it encouraged him. And I did want to be friends. I he has some good qualities.
Understood, yeah.
However, that really put me in the soup because he came and visited at one point, and I was looking for an apartment up in the city. I was tired of driving from Marina Del Rey up into the city where all the action was when you're single. And it was expensive. And he came out and visited once. His parents lived in Southern California, San Diego. Mm. So he would visit them. Anyway, before I knew it, he wanted to meet me for brunch, went to Cravings. He got the newspaper out. He started looking at places. He circled a place, 8488 Carlton Way was for rent. We drove up there, and I am not kidding. He literally rented the place on the spot. And I was just like, what are you doing? And he goes, well, you deserve to have a nice place. And if I'm ever in town, it was like a three-bedroom. Kathy was there. It was had a dramatic view. It was nice. But I said, I'm not living here. Well, he left and soon after that got arrested. And I went to Germany to see him at his request and he wanted me to hire an attorney, but he needed me to go around and collect money. And, that was probably the biggest mistake I ever made because I didn't know about the conspiracy law.
You didn't know anything.
I didn't know that if you do one thing or even if you have knowledge, they will you have to work with us. You have to tell us what you know. You can set people up for us. And he was over in Germany.
He never sold a drug.
No, I never sold ecstasy, and nobody ever took the stand and said that I sold ecstasy either. But I did run around and collect bail money. He thought he was going to get bail and money to hire an attorney, and it wasn't all kosher. So when the feds busted into my home, and he said, move the house from Dallas into that house that I just rented.
Meaning all of his possessions. He was stuck over there.
Yeah,
all of his possessions
I'm like, I just went from I'm not going to live in this house and you can't come out here and just try to, wiggle your way in to I'm moving your stuff for you to L.A. But I don't know. It's just like a river flows and leaves fall in and you're just sort of. I just found myself kind of doing things that I shouldn't have. Yeah, it's impulsive. We do things all the time. But anyway, the feds busted into my home there. And
what was that like? What were you, if you don't mind, if we ask you?
She's had great parties.
But I mean, were you just like watching television? Were you asleep? Were you,
No, I was gone. So when I pulled into the garage, two men rushed me, and it wasn't like SWAT back then. It was just blue jeans and cowboy hats. And so they had guns pulled. And somebody in the Hollywood Hills had just a few days before that been robbed where some crooks came into when she pulled into the garage and pistol whipped her for her, wallet. So I thought that's what was happening to me. I was just like, oh, my God, I'm being robbed. But they were screaming, don't move, hands up. That's a contradiction that's kind of dangerous when somebody's pointing a gun at you. But
because people have been shot with their hands up.
Yeah.
And then I heard them screaming for backup. So it wasn't long before they pulled me out of the car. And then that's when I saw that my house was at the mercy of 10 people who were ransacking it. If you just pulled out the drawers of like Kathy's little.
Yeah, they just throw things in.
And then it's a shock value. And everything was upside down in my house, and they threw me in. First, they put a chair up, and then they threw me in it. And it was the proverbial hot seat where you had the people screaming, and then you had the good guy come in. Hold on, hold on. Back up, everybody. Back up. Yeah, good cop, bad cop. And said, get her some water. But I wasn't having any of it. I just kind of focused on the floor. And I wasn't interested in talking. But to speed this up, they promised me that if I didn't work with them, I was looking at 20 to life and that I would be indicted for conspiracy. And I had never heard of conspiracy. They lived up to their promise. It took them 2 years, but they did indict me. And I was taken to Waco, Texas.
Waco.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that lovely? Yeah.
Now, were you out on bail during this time, or were you in?
No, I had never been indicted. I was still living my life.
Oh, I see. I'm so sorry.
It took them 2 years.
They ransacked, and then you went back to?
Yeah, just
a, were you worried, at, like, thinking over your shoulder all the time?
Yes, because they ransacked my place 2 more times.
Oh, my gosh.
Once was a fake break-in. They ransacked the guy that I worked with. Anyway, it was messy. So I went to Waco, went to trial, and got 24 years based on 3 million tablets.
Probation.
Yeah. No, I got probation. I had 24 years and 5 years probation.
Yeah, but 24 years, that, I mean, you had to serve 24 years.
Yeah. Oh, right. I see what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah, you right. No, parole is what, yeah, because
no,
they took parole away, so there was no parole.
And what did your husband get, though? I would just tell them.
3 years.
Nice.
3 years. 3 years probation.
Didn't lose anything.
He served a little bit of time over in Germany and then came back here, and the same judge gave him 3 years probation because he did snitch everybody out.
He narked everybody out and snitched.
Yeah.
Well, did you have any information? I mean, did you have any real media information that you could have given them?
There was one person that I think that they really wanted me to. In fact, once I got to Waco and was assigned an attorney because they seize everything, so I didn't have any money by that point. There was one person that they wanted me to testify against. I had a little bit of information on him, but I wasn't going to sell my soul. And I know some people kind of roll their eyes at this, but...
Dope rat.
Yeah. It's so heinous what you see them do to people because it's not about the truth. It's not about what you did. Mm-hmm. It's if you won't cooperate, we're going to crush you. We're going to destroy
and
you.
Right. Even if you do... Sometimes they just crush you anyway.
Oh, I know. There's tons of people who copped a deal and didn't get the benefit of
her own lawyer.
Yeah.
Because she went to a psychic once and called her a devil worshiper, the man defending her.
Yeah, he read in letters that I had written to Sandy. We stayed in contact when he was in prison. In fact, he sent me coded faxes to lead me to money. So that's how I was going around leading money.
How do you send the fax from prison?
He would have his attorney. He would. No, I wasn't in prison yet. We're getting off the timeline. He would send me a fax through his attorney. Would fax me stuff because I obviously couldn't talk to him on the phone or anything like that. He couldn't call. And but in these faxes and letters, my attorney read at some point. He goes, "You say in here that you went and saw a psychic," and he goes, "Where do you get these weird pagan beliefs?" And he goes, "You were channeling spirits."
Oh my God!
That was my Waco attorney. Yeah,
your attorney.
My attorney from Waco, Texas, court appointed.
And he even said that he was going.
No. No, he said, "Do you understand that the
compels you?"
Yeah. He when I was trying to get him to focus on defending me and that we needed to interview some people and subpoena people back to Waco, he said, "Don't you understand that the people on that jury are glad that their tax dollars are putting people like you in prison?"
This was
that was my attorney.
Oh my God, he's patting his own back like
she
I'm super.
She got to bring no one in.
I never got
to bring people
I never got. He wouldn't interview. I got affidavits from people saying that if he would have interviewed us, this is what we would have said. But anyway, I got 24 years based on 3 million tablets because you're held responsible for the amount of drugs sold in the or imported or reported, or, even if it's testimony alone. And the bar has been so lowered in federal cases that they don't need tangible evidence anymore. The word of a co-conspirator is enough to support a guilty verdict.
But yet the people that worked for Sandy said that she didn't know anything.
Yeah, many gave affidavits.
Many of them defended her.
Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't even consider that in your defense.
No, because my attorney never would even interview them.
Yeah, and he wouldn't even put those in.
But in... later when I was in prison, I reached out to a bunch of people and said, would you give an affidavit? And one guy who was a big time distributor for Sandy said, we used to come up with schemes. He said, I would be at a bar and you guys would come in and Sandy would act like, oh, look, I know that guy over there, just because it was a ruse. And he said, so we all knew not to talk about it in front of you. He said, so I did ecstasy. I knew Sandy could get ecstasy.
And I did hers, too.
Well, I found some.
Me, too, but it was in Nashville.
But I never paid for a thing.
I never.
Never sold.
Never sold.
I found some crumble.
It
I found
always crumble.
Culls. Yeah. They were culls. They call them culls. I didn't know that. But I found a bag of ecstasy when I went back
year.
To Dallas, and I was like, oh, look at this.
Surprise.
Surprise. You know? I have to admit, I
of course,
like ecstasy.
None of, you know, I mean,
it
I,
was that
I used
year.
To love it.
I loved
love
it, too.
Yeah. Gave you, know. You a little, you know, upper, and you felt all happy.
I love you, man. Let's dance.
Yeah, I love reggae music when I was on it.
See, you kids, they don't know what this crap is y'all are ingesting. I did it in my act here, whatever.
Yeah,
they're
now,
just rolling.
In the old days?
It was great.
It just made you smile.
Yeah. Well, so how did this, I'm sure your family was by your side, you know?
Yeah,
you,
that's but, usually the only people who kind of stick like glue.
Golly. And she kind of pulled away from a lot of her friends to keep them.
From even being hassled.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Everyone was good. It was like napalm out here. One of my friends, they jackbooted. They knocked on her door, and she, you know, people don't open their door. And they, you know, jackbooted her and went in and said, how do you know Amy? And do you know that she's in a big conspiracy? She's a big-time drug dealer. You know, they just put thoughts in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy that I worked with had to get a lawyer because they found a little glitch in his taxes. So then his attorney was like, what do you want from my client? And they literally said they would fly out here on private planes and always bragged about it. And they said, we want your client to just tell. They always say, tell the truth. So the attorney knows at that point to say, what is the truth? Because they talk in code.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The truth is Amy is selling MDMA. Amy is selling ecstasy out here. And we want your client to say that. We want him to state it and to testify against her. He wouldn't.
Or else. Wow.
Another person would have done it. And just think, we all have enemies. And I had one woman who lived with me. I won't even mention her name. And I had to kick her out. And I think she was working with them. She came and testified against me with a big grin on her face. She was very jealous of me. And she said, you know, that I gave her ecstasy. She didn't say that I sold it, but she exaggerated the amounts. She said, oh, she'd give me on an infrequent but regular basis some crumbles. But she called it a handful. Well, when you open your hand and you put a couple of, you know, quarters in there, I guess in her mind that was a handful. So I got convicted in Waco, Texas, where, you know, they talked about my lifestyle. And I promoted Tramp and China Club. And people in Waco believe in 9 to 5. And you're home
and
you're tucked in.
Waco 30 plus years ago, too.
God, you're so satanic.
I know. Well, we know what happened to the Branch Davidians.
I thrive on my
indecency. Why did they take the trial to Waco? Because
we found out later that a lot of cities, because it was a Dallas case.
Right. That's.
And I found out, I've met many women in the Dublin prison who were prosecuted in Waco where their cases had nothing to do with Waco. Well, we found out later, it's even in a movie a little bit called American Violet, that there's one judge there. He was corrupt. He's no longer on the bench. He was removed from the bench for sexual misconduct. And you don't have to worry about which judge will come up on the wheel. And it's a very corrupt jurisdiction, very pro-government. Mm-hmm. So even when I stood up and tried to represent myself, the judge basically said I couldn't, which you can't deny somebody that right.
Right.
So anyway, long story short, I went to federal prison.
They get
prison.
Money also. They get money.
Why? You're so well-educated on this topic, Kathy. You really are. While I was in the Waco County Jail, it came out in the newspaper that due to the fact that we're housing federal prisoners in our local scrungy, disgusting, filthy county jail, they got money from the federal government for the drug war. Mm-hmm. And all Bush Sr. was really the architect for the current drug war that we're suffering through now because he, during the Reagan administration, was over the drug war. And he brought all his tricks from the CIA and informants and stuff to the Department of Justice, I feel. Because all of a sudden, they were able to get, there's no entrapment anymore. Remember when DeLorean got off because of entrapment?
Yeah,
that's out. They can do anything they want.
It's like the IRS. They changed the law to whatever.
Yeah, they really can do anything you want. And you don't have a defense. There's no spousal protection because the conspiracy law took that away. They're just like, well, now we'll just throw you in the indictment and you're one of them. So I really thought... And I was even, you know, thinking of Kathy and a little bit in mind because I used to live here, and I'm not going to say I was a big deal, but I knew a few people, and I really thought that Hollywood would find out what was happening, not you per se, as in having to take up the charge. Well, no, but I really thought, okay, there's going to be some celebrities or something who are going to find out about this, and they're going to raise hell. I told my mom that. I said, don't worry. I'm not going to serve 24 years. Just wait until people find out what they're doing.
I wish you'd sent the word out for us to do because, you know, I was a very self-involved person. Like, you know, it was, what can I say?
Well, yeah, you had.
I was divorced after, I was self-involved.
Yeah.
So.
And that's okay. But, here we are in 2019, and now, we're still struggling through this.
Also, the important thing, I'm sorry, the important thing is that she served all that time, but her husband did not.
That's I know. That's what I, when I was reading your bios and that sort of thing, I was absolutely stunned to see that. I mean, I went back and read it twice. I was like, that just seems so unbelievable.
Well, that's the
horror. He even remarried while she was in prison, and they were still married. He even remarried an attorney.
Have you had any contact with him at all since you've been out at anything at all?
Never.
I'm sorry, that's a good story.
He came and visited me in prison because he was going to a Stanford reunion and was sent word through my case manager that he wanted to visit me. And it was the most surreal thing. At first, I was just like, are you kidding me? And then I was like, I got to get out of prison. And I needed an affidavit from him. I had affidavits from five co-defendants. And I thought, you know, I've got to accept this visit. So he came and visited, and he just wanted to talk like we were at an outdoor cafe,
like,
talking about old times.
Not like yeah. he caused this whole thing.
And
that's
so,
a red flag that the conversation is being recorded.
No, it wasn't recorded.
Well, you know what?
In my mind.
Well, you know what? I had my appeal in, and he was still working with them. And so I had already told myself, oh my gosh, if he has a pen, I'm going to ask for the pen and I'm going to undo the pen. Because I was suspicious that he was maybe still working with them.
Yeah,
because I had already sent in all the affidavits in my final appeal. And I said, you know, have you noticed the razor wire around this place and that little truck that is driving on the horizon? And, you know, he was, yes. And I said, well.
And the food?
Yeah. And vending machines.
The vending machines.
Ugh, God, vomit. And so I said, I don't want to sit here and talk about your Stanford reunion. He was telling me all the late, you know, oh, I met with Senator so-and-so, and we're going to do a deal together.
Jerk.
I know.
And did you mention me by any chance that you put me in prison?
Right, I know. I said, I am here for one reason. I need you. You're the one person who knows the truth. I need you to correct the record and give me an F. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear it. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But I said, you know, I'm going to send you the affidavits from the other co-defendants. And when he left, he said, well, can I send you a magazine? I'll never forget that. I was like, we have plenty of magazines here that we share them.
Yeah, okay, one of those, what is that? Those ones that teach you how to use guns and stuff.
Now, going into, you know, when you knew that there was a light, per se, at the end of the tunnel, you know, with 9 years, I mean, explain to us more about how it worked with President Clinton.
I was from Arkansas.
As Bill Clinton was from Arkansas. Oh, yeah.
No, I wasn't, and so... Senator Dale Bumpers is from the little bitty hometown that I grew up in, Charleston, Arkansas, population 2000, and he was governor before Clinton. So they had a very close relationship. Now, at the beginning of Clinton's administration, my mother reached out to him. They used to play golf, and he was like, Nancy, I can't, and my mother's name is Nancy, he's like, I can't get involved in any of these drug cases. I voted for mandatory minimums, and whatever happened, I did that. So that was kind of heartbreaking because we were like, ugh. now it's the end of Clinton's administration, and we I was written up in Glamour magazine, and now we had something where we could show people, just read this. Will you see what happened? Because no politician is going to read transcripts, and if they did, they wouldn't know what happened anyway, because there's just so many lies being told from the witness stand. So he committed, Senator Pryor committed, that article was kind of leading edge, because nobody was writing stories about what had happened to any of us.
It was a really good article.
Yeah, and so 16 politicians wrote supporting my clemency, and even then, it was like, oh, well, you had connections. I'm like, it took 60 minutes. Bob Anderson at 60 Minutes got interested in my story, and we were unaware that the Office of the Pardon Attorney wasn't willing to send my case over to the White House. Apparently, they had asked for it, and this evil woman named Helen Ballwerk had my case. She was a former prosecutor, and the more media I got, the more she hated me, because she felt like I was giving a black eye to her institution. And I know this because Sam Morrison is on my advisory board, and he used to work there. So he was at the Office of the Pardon Attorney when my case was going through the bowels. So anyway, I finally got clemency from Clinton after serving 9 years, 3 months. And when I got out, I decided, you know what? I've got to help some of the women I left behind with CANDU.
Cool. Yes. Good. And she has spent her life trying to right the wrong that was done, because many women.
Watching your documentary, I mean, at the beginning, it's...
Well, yeah, just on the fact that she was saying that a conspirator can just give the word and you're screwed. It doesn't even have to be the truth. They could just not like you and lie.
Some men can be the most expensive date you ever had.
Screwed over that.
No.
And it's not right.
That's just so unbelievable.
And watching the documentary, you know, starting off with the whole, you know, the 420, I mean, I was into it. But then when I really got into the meat of the documentary, I was just mesmerized. And I think I remember the guy, because being from Nashville, his name, I wrote it down in my hieroglyphic notes. But he's a fellow from Tennessee. Who had the farm and
Bernie?
Yes,
Bernie Ellis.
I seem to remember a little bit of press about that when I was living there when the whole thing started in 2002.
Yeah,
but but what was his situation? Was he started growing? He was a school teacher.
He was an epidemiologist.
Epidemiologist.
So his job was to help people with AIDS. He even wrote the curriculum or whatever it is, the statutes or whatever for Tennessee, but they didn't have medical marijuana. He was growing some, and he gave it to two terminally ill AIDS patients.
He's giving it away.
Gave it away, didn't sell it again. And he knew when somebody came to his farm and tried to buy, because everyone knew this one person was a bad actor. And he goes, why would you come up here and proposition me? He goes, get off my property. I never want to see you again. Because you know when you're being set up and you're targeted. And he said he remembers the day that he heard a helicopter. And
well, yeah, that's what he was describing.
Is this the guy that had the cataract? Which is the one that had the cataract? Is that the one that had his eye surgery? Couldn't see the
glaucoma?
Oh, no, that's Donald Scott in Malibu, who they murdered.
They murdered him.
Donald
Scott,
a wealthy man
in Malibu. Right. And
what was the story?
The property. His property, it was pristine. There's a waterfall, and it's surrounded by the Santa Monica Conservancy.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit him up. They wanted him to sell his property because, again, it's
eminent domain.
Yeah.
Leading into.
Right. And he wasn't interested. And so the next thing you know, 30 people raided his home. They got a confidential informant. Again, the lie. They just get somebody who's... you can't even confront your accusers. Who's confidential informant number four? We don't know. That said he was growing marijuana's property. It's they raided his place. Didn't even
find
nothing. Not even a joint in his house. Who doesn't have a seed or something or some? And nothing. And his wife came to the top of the stairs. He had just had cataract surgery.
So he couldn't see.
They don't knock. They bust in. So you get your gun. That's what people do. They literally set up these situations
to
fail. And it's dangerous for them, too, because they could get shot. But so he came to the top of the stairs.
He couldn't
Francis
see
was his live-in, wife, whatever. They weren't married. But... when they saw he had a gun, they shot and killed him. So, but there was
a gun thinking so he's breaking in.
Of course.
No, it was night or early morning. Yeah, and it's just these stories go on and on and on. Now, for just so people understand, this documentary isn't about my story.
This is really an eye opener.
It's very informative.
Because as I said at the beginning, I'm not going to be a spoiler alert, but it's a fascinating and but go
for
yeah.
pot because yes. I okay, so I tried to get clemency for people for many years and nothing was happening, so I was kind of needed out.
And let me interrupt you real quick because I'll forget. I just had hip surgery. Ironically, the first night I had the surgery on a Tuesday morning, when the epidural wore off, I was in agony for 12 hours because the doctors had given me the wrong. They were prescribing for a 150-pound human being when I'm a 260-pound human being. So that was and I don't like the oxycodone. I mean, the doctors were great, the nurses were great. You know, I'm not going into. I'm just talking about the pain relief.
Yeah,
the oxycodone blah. Dennis has horrible back issues. We'll smoke a little bit of marijuana. This is somebody that I heard about. The point of me interrupting you is that the only relief that I've been getting is, and because I don't like it. I mean, I'm weird, and you know, it's not. I smoke a lot years ago. Don't anymore. But that was the only relief I got.
Yeah.
In the last couple weeks, is having a couple of puffs
or the CBD oil
or the CBD oil to let me go to sleep and not because I've been taking the painkillers, you know, as prescribed.
And nothing,
I guess something because I wasn't wailing, but I mean it was the discomfort and that also. And I have a friend, no names mentioned, who this was 5 years ago, was in stage 4 of cancer, and they were saying goodbyes, and the CBD,
right.
She's healthy as a horse right now,
awesome.
Complete remission.
Oh my God.
See.
Mm-hmm. And that's my whole point.
That's the biggest fraud, I think, that's been committed on our society is the demonization of marijuana.
We wouldn't be in the opioid crisis that
we're in today.
Yeah, and the fact that so many people are serving life sentences for marijuana. That should have been let out by now, but they're serving life sentences for marijuana and things like that. Kathy
was so good. She signed her pin-up posters and
stuff. I signed pictures
for all the people in prison. Yeah, I signed them. It made their day.
Marijuana, the assassin of youth.
Reefer Madness.
Movies? Oh, my God.
But they were nice pictures. They weren't.
Yeah. Well, I have four of our pot prisoners at the Museum of Weed right now. Weed Maps did an $8 million exhibit. It's on Cahuenga, North Cahuenga.
Oh, are they hiring?
Tell us again what that's just.
The Museum of Weed, and they contacted me to help them choose four people to put up in a display that's an interactive that are serving time for pot.
Cool.
And so, yeah, so I've got.
Does that include this? You want to tell us about?
You should show this shirt, though.
I just got this in the mail. This is.
She's
from one
always
of the women.
She's working.
Yeah.
24/7, trying to help women.
Yeah.
And men.
Eva Palma
is serving life.
Anticento. Yeah.
Now she's best friends with Josephine Ledesma, who I helped and served time with. Josephine was serving life.
16 years.
And they were best of friends. And Josephine got clemency from President Obama, but her friend didn't. So that was devastating. And she's at the same prison where I served my time, FCI Dublin. She's there with Michelle West, who's another lifer who I'm trying to help. And Patricia Albright is at that prison, who got 5 years for cannabis oil for her son that she was making it for. Now, mind you, she didn't get arrested at the time that she was helping her son, but her son had a rare form of bone cancer. And the doctor said, you know, you might want to try that cannabis oil.
Mm-hmm.
So she started doing that, and it instead of giving morphine, and her the pictures of her son, I mean, he was deformed and everything because it was very painful. So she kept going with it after he passed away. And
to help other people.
Yeah, right. And because you believe in it. Mm-hmm. And now it's legal. So...
She
why is she in prison? Yeah. Huh?
You don't even really smoke pot.
You know, I started.
Oh, you did?
Just
recently.
I was going
to say, because she does it because she wants to help people.
Yeah. Recently, I'm like you, I'm kind of getting the benefits of being able to sleep on something without taking.
See, that's why I did it.
Yeah.
I did those gummy bears because I just love
the gummy bears. The chocolate is good. There's. I just bought a box.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm weird and goofy enough as it is, and you know, if I just get stoned for the hell of it, forget it. I can't even remember where I am. Just like,
what was I gonna say? And that's not my.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fault anybody at all that does, but you know, for me, it's just not for me.
Introvert. So I'm basically an introvert. Getting me out of the house is hard. Once I'm out, I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
So what this does to me is it makes me more. It kind of affects my introvert part and makes me more so, you know.
Well, you know, there's sativa, which is more of a head high, and indica is more of a body high. And so one is sort of a downer, and one is a little bit of an upper, and they're doing hybrids where they blend them. So there's a science to be learned, so you know, like instead of just taking the thing and puffing something in your lungs.
And not knowing where the hell it's coming from. Yeah.
Or what you're smoking. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of getting into the science of learning more about it. And
I just think it's something, because you are so involved in a cause for the, you know, that it's good to know. It's good to understand everything.
We only have a few minutes left, and time flies here on the Bob Dean Show. What I'm saying, though, is that,
Working on getting your
420 DVD. Yes, let's touch on that, because I want to do one round of our game.
We can skip
but
that.
No, what I'm saying is, why don't you come back again so we can talk more
I'd love that, because be I'd love to next time I'd love to spotlight some of the people that we're trying
absolutely,
to get
absolutely.
We can, a couple of them.
Yeah, that way we can be a little bit, because just getting to know you today is fantastic, but yeah, this would be terrific.
I said Christmas there with all these women that have gotten out of prison.
Tallulah.
Well, this year you got to come to the Happy Birthday Baby Jesus Cocktail Soiree.
I would love to.
Every Christmas Eve, baby.
I'd love to.
It's a benefit for the Humane Association.
Okay. I'd love one. This is on video on demand on nearly every platform.
Hold that up.
Okay. Yeah. So you don't really have to get a DVD.
420.
So it's on... You know,
Netflix. And also
my distributor, it's not on Netflix, but it's on Hulu and Amazon, and I don't know. I've made money off of it, so that's always nice, because there's so much content.
To help get people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're working.
Yeah, it all goes into Can-Do.
Can-Do.
It helps generate
so
money.
So remember that Can-Do, Justice to Clemency.
But I was just going to say, I went to the Obama White House 3 times. I've been to the Trump White House 4 times. I don't care who's in the Oval Office, kind of like Kim Kardashian there. With Alice Marie Johnson, who got out with the Trump administration. Obama did a good job. 1,715 people were given clemency during his administration. So kudos, and we really appreciate
deserve
that.
People, yes.
Yeah. But he got played by DOJ, who said, let us control this. And a lot of the best candidates, including most of the pot prisoners, did not get it. Because DOJ can be an SOB. So anyway, we're still working very hard on trying to get the people
go with
who
you.
Didn't get it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, this is fascinating. Can
good.
You come back?
He'd like that.
Great. So you can come back and we can talk about this in maybe a month
and
or
get
so.
And get more into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds great. I'd love that.
It's so...
Yeah, mind-boggling.
Well, there's never enough time on the Bob Dean Show.
No. Yay.
For being such a jerk, I have wonderful friends and wonderful guests.
You're not a jerk.
And you guys will stay
give
friends,
it time.
I know.
Give
you
it
guys
time.
Are going to stay friends, I know.
Yeah. Okay, what was I going to say? So at any rate, we'll plan on you coming back, and we can keep this as a regular progressive thing, if that's all right with you.
You
I'd love
updates.
That.
Updates.
Yeah, yes. that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Wonderful.
So what we're going to do now with a few minutes left, because this is our episode 82. Thank you very much. Yay. And you know what? Because I've been going through all this, all the pain with this friggin' hip and all that, but we're going to be dancing soon enough.
On your behalf.
I never even promoted the episode 81, which was when the last one, we all just sat around and shot the proverbial shit.
Well, you know what? I said some things.
So anyway, be sure to tune in.
You can find episode 81 on iTunes. Now, remember, everybody, please subscribe to The Bob Dean Show on iTunes. Follow us on the iHeartRadio app, Stitcher, STITCHER, for your Android device, and YouTube. And we are going to play one round of two questions of tell us, Jess Jump. And to introduce everybody be quiet, because this is my favorite part. When Dennis introduces...
Jess Jump!
Now what this is, it's Amy Venerable's 1957 etiquette guide.
Who jumped out of a window and killed himself.
I pushed. Dennis reads a question and the panel,
so,
which is us.
I read the question and you guys try to say what she said.
Correct. Okay. All right, fire away.
A friend tells me it is bad manners to serve vegetables in individual vegetable dishes at a home table the way they do in restaurants. Is that right?
Yes.
Wait, you mean home style?
Bad manners.
No.
Is it bad manners?
I don't think.
Wait, let's go back.
Yeah, can you reread that, please?
A friend tells me it is bad manners. Mm-hmm. To serve vegetables in individual vegetable dishes at a home table the way they do in restaurants. Is this right?
No.
No, I think it's imperfect. It's perfectly acceptable. It's perfect. You're talking about having a bowl of broccoli or cauliflower,
etc. What's the matter if it's on a plate?
I don't want to kiss it.
Well, you know what? Probably in a more casual setting, family or close friends, it's okay. But I mean, you know...
How old is this book?
Oh, it's 1957. That's the whole point.
Yeah. So,
I would say
I didn't even
it's
my
fine.
Baby food mixed up then.
It's fine now.
It was fine.
I don't think it should have. I think it should have been separated. So yeah.
Vegetables aren't served this way in first-class restaurants. Instead, the waiter serves them onto the diner's plate from a serving dish.
Oh, yes.
At a family dinner, something like stewed tomatoes could be served in separate vegetable dishes. But in a more formal service, the vegetable is always taken onto the dinner or luncheon plate.
That's why she jumped.
Yeah.
And the question should have said in a formal restaurant. Precisely, that's where it was confusing. You're like, well, wait a minute. We know the whole Downton Abbey thing.
You ordered, I'm telling you, in Downton Abbey, they never.
I guess that's it.
Okay.
Thank you all very much for episode 82.
Don't forget CANDO, CANDO.
Thank you. Foundation.
Please,
I was going to say that.
At CANDOclimacy.com.
You know, please learn more about it and read about it because it's really important.
We're bringing people
home. And thank you, Amy
Paul
Boff, for being our guest today. We're going to have you back soon.